Oasis Podcast, episode 33. Chris Griffiths from The Real People. Back to the Oasis Podcast, episode 33. It's great to be back. It's great to be in the run-in to Noel's album coming out, Who Built the Moon. It's so close now. It's only a week or so away. It's like Christmas is going to come about a month early this year because of this album. So we're really excited about that, and we'll be covering a little bit about that later on in the show. First off, I just wanted to say thank you so much again to all the people that have been donating to the charity appeal that we were running following episode 31 with Brandon Arend. Really, really taken aback by all the people that have donated, whether it be to Brandon's own fundraiser, which is the GoFundMe.com/Delta Cancer Album, or for, as I say, the people that have just then made donations to the cancer charity of their choice. It's absolutely brilliant. And so just to give you a few shout-outs, Chris Park, Richard Bowes, Patrick Ridge, Martin Langhorn, Jeff Sherrin, Alex Kryzan, Katie Georgiou, Dave Walker, Daniel Best, Valley Moore, Louise Nutt, Andres Martinez, Kelly Panter, Jenny Daniel and Hart Roberts, Eric Burden, Stephen Sandy Hotz, Claudine Eliserio, Federica Capauno, Rich Bryant, Debbie Castu, Dee Neuer, Tracy Ashenbrenner, and also all our patrons, because you indirectly have donated, because I'm going to be donating all the November and December patron earnings to the cancer charity. So thank you so much to everyone who's done that. If you've donated and you've not let me know about it and you'd like to get hold of the file, then please get in touch on any of the social media platforms, just at Oasis Podcast, or email me oasispod@gmail.com, and I will send you the link over to the episode, whether it's Dropbox or just a MP3 over email, whatever's easiest for you. Or, as say, if you're a patron, all you need to do is go to patreon.com/oasispod. And if you just look back at the posts, the post from a few days ago, it's there. You can just stream it right there or download it from there. So that should all be fine. And it's absolutely fantastic. Brandon is already over $1,000 towards his goal, which is absolutely brilliant. And just to remind you, what he's doing is all that money is going to be used to then record an album, which is going to be his own original songs about his struggle with cancer, which is then going to be sold. And all of the proceeds will be there to raise money for charity. So it's really exciting. If you can help out, then please do get in touch. But much appreciated. So the main interview for today is with Chris Griffiths. Now, if you know your Oasis history, then you know who that is. He is half of the Griffiths brothers that primarily make up The Real People, and is mainly known in the Oasis world because it was The Real People in their studios that basically helped shape the sound that became Oasis. Go away and listen to Life in Vain, or Better Let You Know, and then listen to Supersonic and Rock and Roll Star, and that just demonstrates the difference that the Griffiths brothers made in the Oasis sound. You cannot underestimate how important those guys were. And it's a shame that over the years that maybe certain parties have underestimated how important they were. But they do appear to be getting their dues now. And that's part of today's episode. That's the point, is just to make you aware, if you weren't, who the real people are, how important they are, and and let's give them a bit of dues, and also get in touch with them and let them know that Oasis Podcast sent you. So let's have a bit of news. Noel's album is right around the corner, as I said, and his promotion has been ramping up. He did probably the most interesting one that he did the other day was an interview with Front Row, which is the Radio 4 Fancy Arts program. And on that, they played a few clips of some different tracks from the album, plus also a clip from Dead in the Water, which is the bonus track on the album. And let's have a little bit of that. Also this week, It's a Beautiful World officially came out as a single. I think last week I thought it was going to be out on Monday, and then it wasn't. And it actually came out on Friday, which was yesterday. So it was really good to hear that. You know, we'd heard it all before on Jules Holland, but it's good to hear it in full. And yeah, it's a very interesting track. There's a lot going on. I mean, I know that Noel was interviewed and said that he described this album as cosmic pop. And if you haven't listened to it with headphones on, make sure you do, because all just the noises that are going on and the shimmeriness and the use of stereo, it is a proper sonic journey. Whatever you think of the song itself, is incredibly well produced. So, really interesting. I can't wait to hear it in the context of the whole album. Very exciting. And yeah, and then those snippets, as I played there, that were played on Front Row. And apologies for the quality of those snippets. They've not been made available by the BBC to download, so I've just literally played them into the microphone. So they don't sound great, but you get the idea. And it's only a few more days to wait until the full album will be with us. So I said that if anyone would like to give us their feedback with an audio message, we'll play it. And I asked people to be short and snappy with their message. And I think Melanie has taken that to the extreme.
Dead in the Water reminds me of Noel. Being alive. And he's somewhere out there.
So thank you, Melanie. That was very succinctly put. But my understanding of what she's saying there is that little clip of Dead in the Water demonstrates the old Noel. You know, the fact that the classic songwriter Noel and not this sort of collaborative, modern, forward-thinking, sort of just different Noel that we appear to be getting with this album. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that Dead in the Water, the full version of it, does fit in with the album as a whole. One of the other things to say is that they've released another one of those behind the scenes videos for It's a Beautiful World, and hopefully we'll get a bit more of those when the album comes out proper. They were saying that it will be a full length documentary, so I'm really looking forward to that. And just to say, next episode will be out just before the album comes out, hopefully, and it's going to be featuring two interviews, one with EC, who is the singer who appears on Fort Knox that I recorded a few days ago, and also I'm due to speak to Jess Greenfield, who is also playing keyboards and singing with Noel, who you will have seen on Later with Jules. And if you are a Twitter follower, you will have seen I put my foot in it the other day. I sort of when I'd had these messages back and forth saying that we arranged to do this interview, I then said, hey everyone, you need to follow Justine at Greenfield Sings, and her name's not Justine, it's Jess, which is quite embarrassing, and it highlighted the fact that Twitter does not have an edit tweet button. And I just sent that tweet and then had to go out and was driving and then came back and realised the mistake I'd made, and everyone laughing at me. But there you go. Think before you tweet, boys and girls. Do it like a day. And over on the Liam side of things, he's been in America. He's been playing gigs over there. Brandon went to the one in LA the other day, and it was quite controversial because he only did an hour. You know, he literally finished the set after an hour, which, you know, I think people were quite surprised and disappointed. You know, you expect sort of to see at least kind of an hour and a half. And then Liam went on a bit of a Twitter rant about it. He's had a couple of good Twitter rants in the last few days, which is always exciting. Basically saying any rock star that does more than an hour and a half is immediately a wanker, I think he said. So that's been good. He's been very entertaining on Twitter. If you are seeing him on his current tour, I think he's just played Phoenix last night. If you're seeing him, then, and you're able to drop me a review, I would appreciate it. Feel free to fire it over. And if it's good, we'll play it on the podcast. So let's have some new music now, shall we? This is a band called The Underground Vault. And they've sent me a little intro, so rather than me banging on about them, they can introduce this clip themselves.
We're the Underground Vault from Southwest London, and we've been gigging this year around London promoting our EP Dawnbreaker, which is on Spotify and iTunes. In terms of Oasis kind of influencing us as a band and all our friends, during the 90s, we kind of grew up through that whole era, and Oasis influenced us to pick up guitars, inspired us completely. So the music we kind of write and put together is definitely Oasis influenced. They're a massive influence on us, Liam and Noel and the whole band in general. So our EP definitely represents that.
A massive respect to Oasis podcast. You guys are doing a great job out there. Especially promoting new up and coming bands, which is great. Got massive gigs booked in for next year, as we're unsigned and, you know, we manage ourselves, so everyone should watch this space.
The songs are written about real experiences, and we consider ourselves a real band. And since we've been out playing and recording and doing gigs, we've had some great responses from promoters, from people that have just watched us, and everything seems to be snowballing and growing. So from that, we've got some really good gigs booked in for next year, and just want to keep going the way we are, really.
You find us on Facebook, which is www.facebook.com/theundergroundvaultband, and also we're on Twitter, which is just at the UV band. There's lots going on there, so yeah, link up on there and say hi.
So thank you very much to The Underground Vault, and make sure you're checking those guys out at all those places that they explained. So just briefly before we go on with the Chris Griffiths interview, Andy Bell is likely to be working with Pete McLeod on his upcoming album, which is going to be very exciting. Shed 7 are currently riding high in the charts. Their new album came out and did unbelievably well, and it's a fantastic album. So make sure you're checking that out. And former guest Hightown Pirates have got a new video as well for their track Chasing Rainbows. So make sure you check that out. Anyway, so let's move on to the Chris Griffiths interview. So after this brief musical interlude, it will be me with Chris Griffiths. Hi Chris, it's James. How are you doing?
Hello James, you're okay mate?
I'm very good, thank you sir. How are you?
I'm alright, last time.
Cool. How was the dentist the other day?
It was alright. I'm gonna go back. It's sort of like selling the knees on the root canals, and I thought the knees, I was gonna put a clown on.
Oh, it's not pleasant.
Too bad, mate. I'm not falling out older than I'm getting, mate.
I remember. Your voice is your job as well. Are you always? I remember Freddie Mercury never had his. Freddie Mercury never had his teeth fixed because he was scared.
He shouldn't he?
Yeah. Well, he was scared that if he did, it would like ruin his voice or whatever. And so he was like, no, I'll keep them as they are.
Now my lips been new, but they're all crumbling now, mate.
that rock and roll lifestyle, man.
Just got a rock and roll toothbrush.
Gotta get a nice shiny pair like Shane McGowan did. They're nice now. Have you seen them?
Yeah, I think Sean Ryder's got a nice shiny pair now.
Sean Ryder looks funny, man. He looks like the Cheshire Cat now. It's hilarious, isn't it?
Mate, he looks really, really well. You know what I mean?
Nice one. No, well, McGee's got them all out on the road again, isn't he? It's great.
Yeah.
Showing how the young kids, how it should be done. But no, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's all drinking tea.
Cool, good. So, anyway, Chris, so I've pressed record anyway, so I'll, you know,
okay, kid.
Might put in some of that stuff, might not, we'll see. But yeah, how it works.
Mate, you put whatever you want in.
All right, good, no worries. So so you mentioned when we spoke briefly the other day, and you were off to Glasgow to do a gig with, and Diggsy was supporting you as well there. How was that?
Yeah, that was a crack and a half. It was all right because Diggsy sat next to our kid all the way up there and bored the ass of him all the way up there, and then proceeded to sit next to him on the way back. So he had like at least 11 hours of Diggsy just talking shit down his ear. So it was all right. It was good to watch. We had to watch because it wasn't in my ear, so it was all right. But mate, that fella, come on, we went to he turned up to get in the tour bus to go to Glasgow. He turns up at 10 o'clock in the morning with a can of lager in his hand, and we dropped him off at 10 o'clock the next morning, and he still had a can of lager in his hand. No kiss. He's fucking good, mate, I'm telling you.
That is fantastic, isn't it? That's proper rock and roll.
Yeah, there's a little dude up there, a mate of ours called Robert McDonald, runs it. It's just a very small venue, but it looks absolutely every time we go up there.
Oh, fantastic.
I do just call the Vortex, the Weaver Arms.
Yeah. Fair play.
Yeah, so then we've done Coventry last week, which was an amazing turnout. It's like we put a thing out over like just over Facebook and that to try and we never had an agent at the time, which we've got one now, so we can't do this no more really.
Yeah.
But we put it out just over Facebook. Any fans were like on a fan base want to put a gig on, give us like a basic ways to get like our expenses to get up there and everything, and it's down to them to promote them and stuff like that. So we've got a few people on board doing a few gigs and stuff. So we have this guy called Chris Grosner or something from Birmingham. He got one on in Coventry last Saturday. I can't remember his date. 21st, it was 21st October. And it was only 200 capacity, 250 capacity, the Empire in Coventry. And he sold the small room out, so he moved down to the big room. When I got there, I thought, oh, shit, this is the big myth. You know what I mean? I'd rather do a smaller venue, chocker, than a bigger venue out of empty, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I wonder what it's going to be like. And by the end of the night, it was rammed. It was really, really, it got a really good turnout.
Oh,
I'm not sure how many, but it was cool. Like, we were all shouting, really. That was cool. Yeah, give us a buzz again.
Lee,
yeah. Who tragically died last year. So, but that should be, it should be a celebration of his life, really, so it should be really good. Really good night, because he was one hell of a fella. He was one of the funniest men I've ever met in my life.
Great musician as well, by the sounds of it.
Fantastic guitarist. And then we've got the Shine Festival week after that.
And smaller are back for it as well.
Yeah, Stephen and Andrew's here. They're doing it again. Well, Stephen should put the band together without asking anyone, I think. And yeah, so they're doing the Shine Festival. And I think they're doing a benefit gig for another mate of ours. He's had a bloody stroke. A really good friend of mine called Arthur Rooney. And he's become visually impaired. So doing a bit of a benefit gig for him. Unfortunately, we can't do because Stephen never put the dates to us and just booked the venue. And unfortunately, me and our kids are already booked out doing a gig.
Okay.
But we'll sign off.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. Well, it's something that you guys have done quite a bit, haven't you? Like, whether it's for different charity CDs and things like that, recording tracks. I know you did a Beatles track for a Liverpool CD. You did Hey Jude, didn't you, for a benefit CD?
Yeah, but anything that we can get involved in, you know what I mean? Because if we can, we will, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do loads of things like that. Yeah. It's a lot of work for sharing, mate.
Don't know how to talk about it. So hey, it's you. Don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her under your skin. Then you begin to make it. No, cool. Well, I was going to say, just on the that kind of links into the kind of Oasis stuff. In that, I know that what's been often said is that Liverpool has a much more collaborative attitude than Manchester, right? And
obviously, because I'm not from Manchester and I wasn't brought up in that scene. We've just been used to what we're used to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've heard that a lot. Like when we were working together with Oasis and stuff like that, they were a bit like. Didn't he used to be in that band and he used to be in that band? What is in Liverpool is a lot of bands split up and then you go and join another band. It's all the same. Musicians make other bands up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and it just goes in different areas, you know what I mean? Mm. So.
Yeah, well, like Ian Brody's done so much, and then like Dave McCabe will jump around. He's done stuff with Diggsy, and you know, it just feels like the Coral. You know, they all jump around and help each other out, and it just feels a much more collaborative passion for music, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's what it is. I wouldn't say that they're not all just as two-faced and as bitchy as everyone else, because everyone is, you know what I mean? Especially the music business, honestly, God. I don't know how many times I've been caught talking behind someone else's back, you know what I mean? But it's just the way it is. I think that's the way generally the music business is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As I say, it's a lot more, years ago when I used to go out drinking a lot more and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like, you'd bump into all the same bands. But I think all the same bands on my ear are all doing the same sort of things now. You're doing things with your kids or you're out trying to work, but you're playing anywhere, trying to earn a few quid. Or you're in writing, either writing or producing or doing something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, spot on. No, good. Well, I mean, and the big thing with, you know, in the Oasis fandom world, obviously, which I'm a part of recently, was the fact that you guys got this. Well, first off, a couple of years ago, Tony McCarroll's book comes out, right? And it's basically like the bloody Real People and Oasis book, because he just, you know, he really does, you know, play up massively how important you were in the band, people, if you're in the know, you know how important you guys were. But I think it was great of Tony. He didn't need to do that, and yet he went out there and said, no, these guys were so important to it, and you know,
I haven't seen Tony more or less since the whole thing just exploded. I hadn't more or less seen him. I got a phone call. I don't even think I had seen him. I got a phone call saying he was doing this book. He'd been in touch with me when he was doing the Liable thing, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm trying to take him to the Old Bailey or whatever it was, thing that he won in the end. And we'd had a little bit of a speak, but that was once. sort of thing. And then we hadn't met up. And then he phoned and said he was doing this book because I remember any stories and this, that, and the other. Was it like just it comes down and him and his mate can come down and interview me and our kid for an hour.
Yeah.
So, honest to God, he comes down with his mate. I can't remember his mate's name now, but he's a really nice fella. Richard, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Richard comes down. And he comes down and he got into the car and was like, I just seen him yesterday. Like, you know when you're just like showing them people where. It doesn't matter how many years you haven't seen them. It was just like I hadn't seen them yesterday.
Fantastic.
We come in, we had a cup of tea, and we just had a little chat for an hour. And out of that little hour, we remembered so many little stories and things that we'd done and everything. That, like, yeah, it was quite a bit. The book was great. It was really good reading if anyone hasn't read it.
I loved it. I think it's my favourite book on Oasis, you know, and that even includes like Paulo Hewitt and people like that are proper trained writers. And yet there's just, because he's just real. He's just like, you know, it gives you what you want to know.
Yeah, this is me, Richard, who never wrote a book before. So I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I think he's, Biggin's just been one of Liam's ex-old mates, hasn't he? I don't know whether Richard wrote that with him as well.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what that's about, like.
Oh, do you mean the Biggin, Paul Ashby?
Yeah, so I don't know what that's all
going to
be. He's a bit of a character, isn't he?
Apparently, I've had a little bit of messages back and forth, so he might be coming on, but he's, interesting character, I think, is definitely definitely a way to describe him. So.
Well, hey, well, that's bigger,
yeah. Yeah.
But as I say, I was me, because he didn't say, you go, oh, I'm going to put this in, he just come in, and we had a cup of tea, and it's made test record, and I'm talking about half an hour. And so, well, that'll do us, you know what I mean? And when we read the book, that half an hour turned into a good load of reading, you know what I mean?
Oh, it's brilliant.
And it's just like when we, do you know what really just points to us? There was this supersonic film that came out.
Yeah.
We got a phone call from the production people who were making that. And just a bit like yourself, James, you know what I mean? Saying, how important we were in the starting of the band and this, that, and the other, and we really wanted to get us involved in the film. And so we thought, we said, come on down to our studio, not we'll get charged for you or anything, we'll do an interview for free, so you don't have to hire anywhere or anything like that. We come down, we arrange that we do the interview, us and Dixie at the same time. So, because Dixie was there at many of the recording sessions, and we tell them everything, the truth and everything. And we've done an interview for about an hour. And so I mean, he had loads and loads of questions. I've even got it recorded, maybe if you want to do something sometime.
That would be brilliant,
I've got it all in my Pro Tools, and he never used one single thing. It just, when the film came out, it was just like, we were just cut out of this single sort of history. It was like they went from the Boardwalk basement to Nebworth, you know what I mean?
I know.
What happens in between, you know what I mean?
I know.
So that was really disappointing, man.
I think that film did a good job in a lot of ways, but you know, you can tell this is the, you know, signed off by Noel and Liam, and so yeah, it is their, it's very much their story and the way that they want it to be told. So if it didn't fit in nicely with the agreed, you know, official narrative, it just didn't happen. And yeah, I was pretty disappointed with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then talking
because
of Liam,
we didn't know. You see, I never went to a preview of it or anything. You don't get an inclination that you're involved in it or not. So, but the interview that we done was really, really funny, especially having Diggsy and us at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
I can imagine.
We were having a great laugh during the interview. Do you know what I mean? And I thought, oh, something like this is going to get used. And then someone went to see the film, and I went to see it. And he went, no, you're not in it at all, mate.
It's gutting. No. Mate, we know the truth. The fans know the truth.
Yeah,
don't worry about that. And Liam knows the truth because the other day, a few weeks ago now, he's gone on a complete Twitter rant, as he occasionally does, and everyone gets so excited about it. And he is absolutely just, you know, bigged you guys up massively.
Yeah,
over
the blue, wasn't he? He's been going on about an album that we recorded. We just finished recording Marshmallow Lane when we started working with them. We finished it in 92 and we were working with them in 93. So when we were talking with the Inspirers, we were playing a lot of them songs that we've just been recording for Marshmallow Lane. So obviously they were listening to it at the time because it never got released, you see. It only got released, reissued by us when we got the rights back to it a few years ago. So obviously they've known that album for years and years. And just out of the blue, he said, oh, well, I'm sitting listening to Marshall and Lane by the real people. I was starting quoting lyrics all sorts of things. But I think if some of the fans have seen the tweets, it would be really good for us.
On Spotify,
just
is that?
I'm not really sure because I'm not that way inclined. Okay. Things aren't on all, like the social media and that. But it gone up a hell of a lot from just him tweeting about it, you know what I mean? Which is great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And
just he put things that he wanted to maybe meet up, and I don't know, I'd love to meet up and write some stuff for him, you know what I mean?
Maybe his new album. Well, it's one of the things that we said that, you know, I think the new album's like, I don't know, have you heard As You Were yet? Have you had a listen to it?
I haven't heard the whole album. I've heard bits and bobs. But, you know what I'm like? I've never downloaded an album in my life, so I might get my kids to do it for me.
Fair play. I mean, I think it's a really good album and we really like it. But I did an episode where we sort of spoke to quite a few different fans and we all broke it down. And and one of our things that came out a couple of times was, you know, yeah, it's good, it's great, but what we really, you know, what we'd really love is if he went and did, you know, a track with Ashcroft, a track with you guys, a track with Diggsy, and you know, because, you know, you guys know how to write for his voice, you know, you guys know how to write in that style, and I think that, if he recorded an album or even a few tracks with you guys, it would be phenomenal.
Well, you know what, the guy with the Cherry Ghost, that for what it's worth, just sounds like a pure Liam song, doesn't it? It's Liam doing Lennon, as he usually does sometimes. But it just sounds like a classic Oasis track to me. I thought it was a great song.
And
the Water Glass one, that's a killer. I feel like that one's a brilliant song.
Yeah. Well, he's been working...
I don't know whether... Are they actually co-writes or have they been... by someone else?
It's a bit of a mixture. So a few of them he's credited by himself, but then most of them he's credited with these other guys, Greg Kirsten and Andrew Wyatt and people like that. And I get
that's what me and our kids do a lot of the time over the last few years. You get into a room and you just see what happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not like these other guys have wrote the song. That magic has happened more or less that day. Do you know what I mean? So it's a very special thing, you know, during the co-write.
But I've got no issue with it. Like, you know, a few people have sort of picked him up, like, oh, and Noel even mentioned this the other day. Oh, well, he doesn't write the songs. But
he's not a fully fledged musician like Noel, is he? You know what I mean? Yeah, I know he plays the guitar a bit, like, but he's... Oh, Noel's been writing songs since he was... 14 or something.
Yeah, so, I just haven't got an issue with it. You know, if you think back, like pre Beatles, artists never wrote their own songs. That's why you had artists and repertoire, A&R, right? Yeah. You know, it was, and
but
so
he's still writing them. He's co-writing them. Do you know what I mean? I used to know who wrote what. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if he went off and did like just an album of covers or an album like, you know, like McCalmont and Butler, you know, where they, you know, it's like Bernard Butler's written all the songs and he gets this guy, David McCalmont, to sing them. Brilliant. You know, why if you've got the best, this brilliant singer, brilliant frontman, you know, why not? It's like I was saying to someone the other day online, if you've got a great actor, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, that Daniel Day-Lewis, he doesn't write his lines. He's the best actor in the world. You know, I don't care if he doesn't write the script. He delivers them better than anyone.
Yeah, well, as I'm saying, it's a bit of a different thing though if someone does a complete cover, but I think that's just showing respect. If Liam was to cover one of the two, like, I know that he's a big, massive fan of a song of ours called Dream On.
Yeah.
If he was to cover that, you know what I mean? I wouldn't take nothing away from him just being a writer. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just he's going, listen, this is one of my favourite songs. I think I can do this really justice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think he should. It'd be great. But he did, because BDI did... Sons of the Stage, didn't they? That World of Twist track. So, you know, it wouldn't take much for him to do a bit of Dream On or one of them.
Someone had told me years and years ago that he went into the studio and recorded it once. I don't know how true it is, but an ex manager of mine said, I don't know whether someone had heard it or it might just be in a rumour, but you never know.
There we go. That's going to be, it's going to be on all the forums now, mate. Don't worry about that. Thanks for that, Chris.
Yeah.
Cool. The other thing I was going to say, I mean, while we're on that tip of kind of having worked with them, I mean, so obviously you guys did the live demonstration tape. I mean, everyone knows this and that's listening to this, really. And if you go into, you did a really good, I think it's just one of these where they sent you the questions and you answered them with the Oasis recording info website, where you did break it down quite nicely of like who recorded what when and that sort of thing. So I don't want to sort of go into all that because you've all covered all that off before. But yeah. I mean, just like a couple of the big ones is like, you know, the going back to Tony, I love the story that Tony tells in the book, and you've mentioned it before, where, you know, Noel, it sounds like they were already down on Tony, even in 93. They were already kind of had it in for him.
Yeah, even when we were doing the demos, one of the very, very first demos, you've got to remember, this is the first time that we more or less been into a studio. And it's called a live demonstration because it was all recorded live, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's called a live, there may be a few things over with some of us, but it was only done on a little Fostex 8-track, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've still got a reel of a rock and roll star, and I had a reel of Columbia as well, which had me singing the verses, which the words that I wrote at the time.
Yeah.
And you can hear like on the drum takes, you can hear all the spill of all the guitars, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So you've got to more or less have them guitar takes in, because otherwise, you know what I mean?
Otherwise you can hear it, yeah.
It's spill from a different track.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I mean, so that was the other thing was like we had a question from one of our guys, which I haven't got to hand right now, but it was on the Live Forever forum, sort of asking about that Columbia, because I think that the genesis of that, correct me if I'm wrong, is that Liam had come in with some lyrics, but because it had hung around from kind of pre-Noel days even, but then you sort of put together, you know, some of the other lyrics to it.
Awesome story is it was an instrumental song. Completely instrumental. He recorded an instrumental, and while they were upstairs, me and Mark Coyle, I said, this track is too good to not have lyrics, it's to be an instrumental, what you walk onto. So I grabbed the mic and just in one take, sang everywhere, here we are, all this confusion, nothing the same to me, but it's all of the first bass.
Yeah.
Liam comes down, likes it, and wrote Liam up the chorus. Liam goes, I can't tell you the way I feel.
Yeah.
And then Noel wrote the second verse. And then I wrote all the yeah, and all the
come on,
all them little ad-libs and everything at the end were mine as well. Trying to get our name on the record and stuff like that, we were badly advised by solicitors and everything. We signed off on them, so I got took another court settlement for that and for what was the other one? On Callaway, which was like just a lift.
Oh, don't.
Feel the pain.
Mate, don't go away. If anyone, I mean, anyone that listens to this has heard this, because I've dropped it in a couple of times. And what I've done is, you know, and I'll do it in here now, is where you just play the you know, clip of the Oasis Don't Go Away song, and then you just drop in the Feel the Pain, and it's ridiculous. I don't want to be there when you're coming down. You know, and when did you first hear that? And what was your reaction?
Well, I first heard that, because Taylor Payne was on Marshmallow Lane, so he's obviously been listening to that. I first heard that, it was on the second album, wasn't it?
It was on the third album, it was on Be Here Now.
It was one of them. There was so many little things, so many little coincidental songs that sound similar, or riffs, or little words, or sayings, that I was getting pissed off with it by then, and I'd approach Chambers regarding Columbia, because it was always a case of, no, don't worry about it, your name will be on it, you know what I mean? We've only just done this first pressing of 100,000. Next time it comes about, I'll let the publishers know, and your name will be on it, don't worry about it, you know what I mean? And the same with Rock and Shit. And obviously my name wasn't on it when it came out as a B-side. I'd roll with it, and my name never got onto Columbia. So I was looking for it. I was looking things out. Sometimes I made things that weren't there, but you know, I was like, is that one of my riffs? Is this one of my riffs? And then I was actually listening to the album the day it came out in my ex-manager's recording studio, and I just said, don't go away, that you'll stay. And I went, by fucking song, there's no exaggeration. I punched a hole in the seal. Actually, a hole in the Dexel seal. No, it's still there now. It was in the Alpink Museum, the Art Stadium. We were in his office, under the stairs, and I punched a hole in the seal. But as I say, I don't know how much you can broadcast about that, because I did say that I was a court settlement for it.
Okay. Well, what I'll do, mate, I'll.
It's absolutely silly. I should have took a lot more money on it. I should just held on. Get my name on the record, which is all I wanted. I didn't have to ever got 5% of it.
Yeah.
I just wanted my name on that record.
Yeah, absolutely. But, so how come you get the co-write credit on Rocking Chair then? But yeah, was that another sort of court thing?
Was another, just a complete, it wasn't a sit-down co-write. It was a complete lift off a song that I had that we were recording at the same time we were doing all that demonstration. I had a song called Growing Old. My verse in Growing Old, man, I'm older than my attitude, I'm colder than you'll ever be, there's nothing left to say to you, nothing left to say to me, something in them sort of lines.
Okay.
That was the melody, and they were the sort of words. And then my brother went on the same session where you were talking about Tony on the drums. I don't know if it was to Bring It On Down. It was in the and he had our drummer with him. It was in Eden or something like that in London, and Noel played our kid. He said, I've got some new B-sides here, I'll play them. So I came and said, that's our kid's song. What are you doing?
Okay.
But he was just more or less trying to make us go bankrupt, because by sending letters to solicitors, so in the end our legal fees were astronomical. So in the end our solicitor was going, I don't think these two little scally lads from people are going to be able to pay this bill. You know what I mean? So let's just accept a deal. So
yeah.
They get paid and we get a bit of money. And I was fighting for was my name on the fee of the tax.
Sure.
The payback, the percent, whatever the percentage we agreed, whether it be 10%, 20%, 5%, I wasn't really bothered. I just wanted my name on the check.
Sure.
And the back payment of that percentage.
Yeah.
So it never really happened. I got badly advised, and I took my name getting put onto Rocking Chair and a small percent. I mean, a small payoff
for
the other two tracks, which was a really silly thing to do at the time.
Yeah. But still, it's understandable if you just don't know how that's going to go with court, do you? Whether or not you're going to be just literally bankrupted by it.
Well, you're finding someone who's got so many millions of pounds and you've just earned a little bit of money for the first time in your life. You know what I mean? And it's not a lot, you know what I mean? And it's getting it up by court costs for something that you shouldn't be fighting for.
Yeah.
So in the end, it's just like, oh, fuck this, you know what I mean? Give us a little bit of money, pay the solicitor, pay that, and get me a name on that. And do you know what? In the end, everyone knows the truth anyway, so...
Exactly. One of the things, one of the little points that was made, someone asked the question to Tony actually when I interviewed him, but was Tony McCarroll, sorry, is like what the, there's a little chant used on Columbia, and you said, oh, it was on a CD, but any idea what that was, or could you dig that out?
Yeah, it was all from me. I used to collect, when we were on tour, I'd just collect different CDs, or maybe like, you know, Tibetan monks, all weird little chanting things. I always used to use little videos like that, samples on my demos.
Take away from me the noise of your song. Take away from the melody of your heart. Take away from the melody of your heart. Just scroll down like water. Just like scroll down like water. Just like scroll down like water. Righteously, like an ever-flowing stream.
So I think with Tony, is it Tony Benn? Was doing some sort of talking on Columbia at the end of it. That was just live. I just turned the radio on and we were like just chucking through the radio and that just come on and it just fitted right in. The little chants were like sort of some maybe, I don't know, some like Tibetan or some weird tribe or something. I used to buy like tribal CDs of my kiddie shops and all of this. and you just put them on underneath the track, and then when you're looking for a bit of atmosphere, you just turn it up now and then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I used to do it all the time, put just a mic on the telly.
Yeah.
And then just turn it up now and then when you're looking for a little bit of atmosphere, a little production sick.
Yeah, well, another Liverpool band used to do that, didn't they? I Am the Walrus has got that.
Exactly. That's exactly where I've got it from.
If ever thou wilt thrive, bury my body. And give the letters which thou find'st about me to Edmund, Earl of Gloucester. Seek him out upon the British party. Oh, untimely death.
I know thee well. A serviceable villain. As duteous to the vices of thy mistress as badness would desire.
What? Is he dead?
Sit you down, father. Rest you.
That's what it was.
It was just like a little tribal CD that I had, and I was just trying to make something like a little. Like a little weird, like.
Hey, na, na, hey, hey,
yeah, something like that, yeah.
Have you still got that CD around, Chris? Do you know? Would you be able to dig it out, do you think?
The actual CD of the first.
Yeah, of that like, that weird chant thing. I know, like, just.
You know what? I've got that much stuff in there in the studio. I wouldn't know which one it was, mate.
All right, fair enough.
No,
that's okay. It's just one of those little things that people, you know, on the forums, because they're all digging into, like, what is this bit and who played that?
What is it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, if I do find it, because you never know, I do stumble across things all the time. So if I find it, I'll give you a call, James.
That'd be sweet, man. That'd be good. Cool. I mean, the one thing I was going to say then, I mean, we didn't really touch on kind of the real people and your side of it. I mean, like you mentioned
I'll tell you what I wanted to do before we moved on on the live demonstration. What a lot of people don't realise of that session was they were only just coming down at weekends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the four songs that made the album that we recorded. So we've done Rock and Roll Star, Bring It On Down, Columbia, and Up in the Sky, that made Definitely Maybe.
Yeah.
We also demoed a version of Whatever, which wasn't on an album. And then we also demoed B-sides and other tracks. We've done a track called Alive, Cloudburst, Fade Away, Strange Thing. And we've done a track called Coming On Strong, which got put into the Chemical Brothers tune. I don't know what that was actually called.
Setting Sun.
Setting Sun. That was originally a song called Coming On Strong.
Yeah.
And we've done another song called Lock All The Doors, which is another lift from Bloody Marshall on Lane, which we've got a track called Space, which says Lock All The Doors, Lock All The Doors.
We'll be right back.
And you know that was on Noel Gallagher's last album.
Yeah. So they were so all in all, there was oh, and there was also, they also covered a Real People song, my very first demo, was called Heaven Knows, which I'm still trying to find the reel to. So that was all in all, there was 11 tracks that have been used in that session. Mm. Which is unbelievable, really, from like a few weekends. If you put all the weekends together, it was probably only a week or two. Do you know what I mean?
But
it was over a few months that like they were coming down and staying over in one of our flats or staying in the studio or driving back to Manchester.
No, that's madness, isn't it? I mean, did you... The one thing I was going to say about that is actually when you listen to the early Oasis demos now, because like the stuff they did pre-you, it is a completely different band, right? So you've got that track, Take Me.
I had to turn it off.
Yeah. Well, Liam's voice is so different. He's basically just doing an Ian Brown and like, you know,
definitely.
Like there's that track, Take Me, there's Life in Vain. I don't know, did you hear those ones? Did they come and play you there?
I have heard them before, yeah, and I turned them off. I said, oh, come on, lads, fucking hell. We went to see them at a gig at the Boardwalk, and then went to see them in the Placky Room underneath, and we saw about them coming up, and then we said, listen, just come up and record live. I think it sounds nice. So it took a little bit of, listen, you're doing that too many times, you're doing like, listen, let's repeat that good bit, that riff scores, a little bit of guidance and stuff like that. That's what it took.
Because I suppose at the time, is it weird that like at the time they would, you know, Noel's a roadie and Liam's a, you know, just a kid, and now it's like they're these superstars of, you know, rock and roll, and you guys are like, well, hold on, no, Noel's a, you know, I've always thought that must be weird.
We were the ones with the records, yeah,
exactly.
You know what I mean? They were looking up to us when we first met them.
Yeah.
But the thing was, it really, really hit me when there was, I don't know, around about the second album or the third album that they released. And suddenly, well, one, they were all like spitting Image and stuff like that at the time, you know what I mean? it was like Beatlemania to me, because everywhere you looked, there was people walking like Liam with the haircuts and everything. It was like Beatlemania, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially with the fucking walk and stuff like that, do you know what I mean? And there was even Scousers looking, talking like him, do you know what I mean? You're just like, what's going on here, man?
Well, have you seen that?
It was insane. It was like, there was a thing, you know, that I've done another interview for someone, and he said, what was like one of your worst Oasis moments? It was when, like, they opened up Nebworth at Columbia.
Yeah.
I just knew I wasn't going to get any sort of, you didn't give me any sort of credit about it. I couldn't get any guest list in trouble because there was no more. This is before we started any legal proceedings. Well, he just got told when he got signed, we were like white elephants in the room.
Yeah.
And never got spoke about and any guest list and stuff like that. We just got fucked off in the end, you know what I mean? And that was one of the most heartbreaking things, just watching that. Well, my brother was actually there, and he phoned me up, and he went, Chris, there's half a million people here or something. And he opens up with your tune, listens to them, and it's like, oh, wow. And then I'd seen it on videos and stuff like that. I was like, oh, my God, that's just amazing. They're just fucking huge, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is just mad how it took off, but you know, and a band of, you know, a couple of brothers in a band influenced by the Beatles writing tunes sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's weird. Oh, fair play. And then so you're just touching on the Real People stuff. I mean, so you guys, you know, like you mentioned about, I mean, what it's come up quite a lot on this, you know, when I was talking to Tom Hingley from Inspiral Carpets and stuff, and you know, and it even happened with like the Seahorses. Chris Helm from Seahorses might be coming on. You've got this album, Marshmallow Lane, which is a fantastic album, sat there ready to go, and you're bloody held up by this record company wranglings. That's just done your head in.
Yeah, because with that album, we've got our own way as well. We've signed them. We've done like the sort of baggy sort of singles for them and stuff like that. But we were always being a very experimental band.
Yeah.
When we started recording Marshmallow Lane, we were working with, we've done it with some tracks with Jimmy Miller, who was the Rolling Stones producer. He's produced Street Fighting Man and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We got our chance to work with like a little bit of a string section. One of them, believe we work with a full orchestra. And we were sort of getting our own way, and they were letting us go, like, well, we weren't really going for the big massive singles, you know what I mean, or anything too poppy. He sort of let us do what we wanted to do, which was great. But what had happened in that time, we don't obviously, because it was the early 90s, and the budgets were absolutely huge in them days, we were up a great big massive bill. And what happened was, we were touring America, touring the first album. After we'd finished the second album, then the first album started going really well in America, so we had to go back and start playing the first album over in America. And then when we come back from America, the person who signed was our A&R person, and the person who was the head of the company at the time had been moved on. I'm not saying that he'd been sacked, but you know what I mean? It was different people in their positions. And these are just people who were just gone, listen, you need to get a clear shitload of money back. So just to get rid of the debt, we got dropped. So the debt gets cleared, you know what I mean? So it was just one of them things.
Yeah, and then what, you had to wait?
It was really frustrating because we were getting somewhere with the album. It was quite psychedelic, you know what I mean, for the time, really.
Yeah, and would have fit in perfectly with what was happening with this burgeoning kind of Britpop scene. And yet, and then you guys are completely held back, and then you what? So you finally came out in what, 96, with the once you got the rights back, you said.
No, it only got released about 5-6 years ago, maybe a bit more. But it got released a good few years ago.
Yeah.
But 96, we released. We got another album on our own, produced by ourselves in the Pink Studios. Because the manager of the Pink Studios was a manager at the time called What's on the Outside. That's like a little brown one and like a parcel.
Yeah.
We released that, and we never done another album for about 10 years until we released Think Positive. And after we released Think Positive, then we reissued the first album with all the B sides.
Yeah.
Marshmallow Lane. What's on the B sides, which was all the B sides to What's on the Outside, the brown album, which is like a big castle. And we released the very first demos that we've done, Real People Demos, 1988.
Which is great. And you've obviously, we mentioned it briefly earlier as well, but you guys have done quite a bit of songwriting for other artists as well. Is that, you enjoy that part of the business?
Yeah, it was great. I haven't done it for a while since we recorded the Think Positive. I've done little tiny bits and bobs, but music sort of changed well now. I had an engineer who was like a really good programmer and stuff like that, but he moved on and we don't work with each other no more. So I've got a studio, but it's more set up for doing band stuff, just to go in, everything's just set up so you can just go in and record a live band straight away. We're not really up on the programming sort of side, and the way music is now, people want a song, people want tracks recorded and finished in the day, do you know what I mean? And so it's all right if it's a live band in our studio, but we haven't got programming, so it's a little bit difficult doing the writing at the moment.
Yeah,
it's something that we really used to enjoy because we've been, you know, in Nashville doing it, and we've been, and it was great because some days you don't know who you're working with, you just get an artist sent down. Some days you could be writing bloody country, some days you could be writing hip hop, you know what I mean? And you just go, well, what should we do today, Alison? Stop and go with that.
Well, let's bring it.
If you weren't singing it, do you know what I mean? You could put your head into doing something else. Be a bit fucking funny watching me and our kid fucking singing hip hop. You know what I mean? But it was all right when you were writing it. I'm writing down different genres.
No, I don't know, man. That's it. That's the new direction for the Real People. That's your gangster rap album. That'd be great. You heard it here first.
I'm backwards on that.
And then what about? I mean, writing a song for Cher. I mean, what? How did that come about?
Yeah, it's just an unreal thing. Tony has wrote that song in our bedroom. We used to share a bedroom in Google. And we used to have a little 8-track, which I've still got the 8-track. He recorded a song using a girl called One by One. And he got signed by a guy called Lucien Grange from Polydor Records.
Mm-hmm.
He used musical for publishing and like a little, create a little band together. That was about 96 or something. Nothing ever happened to it. It was just like a little, how would you call it, like a progression deal sort of thing, you know what I mean? Trying to help us out. And nothing ever come of it. But the guy really, really loved the song. And everyone who worked with him really loved this song. So years and years later, I don't think it was Lucien Grace, it was someone else who worked with him. shirt and just steal all my songs. And he said, I remember this song from years and years ago when this kid came on the field. He was rapping on the field, and it was one by one. So she covered in there, become a worldwide. I guess it wasn't a number one in Britain, but it was before she had this, the big Believe stuff and everything.
Yeah.
But it was a worldwide hit. It was like, it was in America, it was in, you know, just all worldwide.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
Well, we've done a lot of work. We've done a bit of work with like a boy band singer band called BB Mac, some of the lads from Liverpool. And that was really enjoyable. They were really good. They were like, when the five of us were singing in the room together, it was something else. It was like crazy, like a chord. It was really weird. But we've done some stuff for them on the second or third album. We kind of like hit in America. Unfortunately, like most people that we work with, we probably split up just after we get drunk.
It's the kiss of death. Don't work with these guys.
That's what you should call it, you know.
Well, so what's the plan? So you guys have got the Monday Morning Breakdown that came out October last year. So
yeah,
it's coming
that
up
came
a year
out
now.
Last, this time last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Since then, I think back in the studio a little bit. I had like a few months off, and I went through every single DAT that I could find. I've talked with the studio, and the way we used to be prolific writers, we'd go in there and we'd write two or three a day, and everything was just put down for like little DATs at the time. So I went in and I've just gone through everything, and I've found all sorts of records that I didn't know I had, or I hadn't finished, and I put them into like separate like little years, so like unreleased, like unreleased 1994, 94 to 98.
Okay.
So I mean, I put them in like little genres of like little 20 tracks on each album. So I've put all that together, and I've just been in the process of overdubbing and like maybe like an acoustic guitar or something, because it's all like the main mix it's done on a DAT.
Mm.
It's not like the actual recordings, because they're well gone. It's all different computers and different hard drives have died and I've lost. So it's just the actual mix that I've done that day I've got. So I've like remastered it a little bit and maybe put an acoustic guitar over it, or a solo, or you know, just over the actual mix.
Mm.
So there's a lot of stuff to be coming out over the next few years.
And have you still got anything from the, like, when you were recording with Oasis, were the tapes just rolling? Have you got kind of outtakes of you talking and things like that? Or did you turn it off and it was just music?
Not really. But what actually happened at the end of the session was really quite silly of me. I give all the tapes to Noel. But I was speaking to Mark Coyle a few months ago, and he's actually got all the tapes. So there probably is a good few little outtakes, you know what I mean?
Mm.
But he got them, and without consulting us or anything, he went and remastered them for the 20th anniversary of Definitely Maybe. And it got reissued as like a little cassette on a pre-order or something, which I knew absolutely nothing about until a few weeks ago. Which I was a little bit pissed off about, because it was something that we were involved in, do you know what I mean? Mm. It was like RT.
Yeah.
So at least it should have been told that it was getting put out, like,
because that's on Spotify as well, so it's not even just that cassette, it is on Spotify, so it's the only place to hear Strange Thing. That's the only way place that exists.
Well, I actually heard some of it, and I don't know what sort of device I was listening on, but I thought it could have been mastered a little bit better.
Well, there you go. There you go. Fair
play.
There
you go. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Yeah, but I was saying, we're just doing a few gigs towards the end, till the end of the year. And then we're going to get this unreleased stuff finished. I might even be really looking at it and going, well, do you know what? That's too good. Should be put out on it, because there's some amazing songs on there.
Yeah.
So I might choose a few and re-record them again and get back in the studio and release a new album early in the new year.
Fair play.
We've got a good few ideas going around our heads that need to be recorded.
Oh, that'd be great, man. We'll stay in touch. Obviously, we'll give a big push online whenever anything comes out. Because, you know, the one thing I was going to say, that I was in a band in the late 90s, and my best mate, who was a songwriter in the band, I was the Liam and he was the Noel, if you want to call it that. And he's a massive Real People fan. And we actually had a song called My Real People, which was dedicated to you guys. So I don't know if we've ever recorded it. If I have, I'll ping it over. But yeah, I think it was pretty good. But we were very Oasis. We've been banging the Real People drum since before Liam's tweets. Anyway, man. But don't worry about that.
Nice one, James.
But cool. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go. The one thing, I don't know if you caught on the text, the one thing we typically end with is the favourite Oasis track from the guest. So is there a particular Oasis track that you're proud of that you want to... Well, over to you, man. I mean, it would make sense, I suppose, to be a rocking chair or a Columbia or whatever, but it's just whatever one you think it would be.
But you know what, to be totally honest, don't go away, because that's a lot more like us, although it wasn't a complete co-write. I think even your verses in that song sound a bit really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A bit. So don't go away, because you'll be fine.
Good, let's play out with that. Chris, thank you for your time, man. That's absolutely brilliant.
No problem, James. Thanks for speaking to you, man. When you hit the ground, so don't go away. Say what you say. Stay forever and a day in the time of my life. 'Cause I need more time, but I don't know why. I got no lines, so don't go away. Say what you say. So thank you so much to Chris. It was really, really good fun to speak to him, and I hope you guys enjoyed that. And I just wonder now whether or not I've completely ruined my chances of ever getting Noel on, having covered some of those clear rip-offs that Noel did on the Real People tracks. But hey, anyway, there you go. Here on the Oasis podcast, we give you the truth. So a couple more iTunes reviews since last week, which was from George of the Zoo, says, insightful, playing catch up on these. Really good podcast, which provides a lot of new to me information while reminding me of things I'd forgotten. Keep up the good work, as you were. Sean1991 says, great podcast, fun and interesting stories, educational, enlightening. Keep up the good work. And Liam, pull your finger out, get on for an interview. I second that. Come on, Liam, what are you doing? And Langers86 says, fantastic podcast. As a huge Oasis fan, this podcast is a gem. I didn't think there was anything else to know about the band after 20 years as a fan. But interesting chat and guests, along with news to keep it current, keeps me wanting more. Keep it up. I am going to keep it up, and whether you guys like it or not. And we have a really good couple of episodes coming up. So next up will be a sort of a double header interview, because I've interviewed both Audrey, aka Yussi, I think it's pronounced, who's the singer on Fort Knox, and I've also interviewed Jess Greenfield, as I mentioned earlier. And so that's going to be like a double header preview of the new Noel Gallagher High Flying Birds album. So I'm going to hopefully get that out before the album comes out on Friday. And then after that, we will be doing a Who Built the Moon review episode, fan reaction. The As You Were reaction went down really well, so watch this space, because I'll be asking for your views and your reactions on that. And also, because I'm going to be at Sub 89 watching the Oasis tribute band, I'm going to be sitting down with Aaron from there, and maybe even the other guys as well. And one of the things I've talked about doing is the next step in our Oasis A to Z. So we are now up to It's Good to Be Free, because as we know, it's brackets comes before A, so brackets It's Good to Be Free is next. So yeah, so looking forward to Aaron breaking that down for me, and also playing it a bit, so that'll be good to hear. So that's the end of this episode. I just need to say thank you all for listening to the Oasis podcast, and a special thanks to our patrons: Remy, Jim, Richard, Amy, Mark, Dana, Mike, Jeff, Davey, Jason, David, Casey and Fraser. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod.
which is where I post articles by myself and my wonderful contributors, Richard and Kyle. Support at $3 per month or above qualifies you for your own bespoke song. But just to say, you don't necessarily have to have a song. A few people have signed up but said, but I don't want a song, actually, and that's fine. And also, the songs are coming. As I say, my collaborator Joel's iPad has died, so we're kind of out of doing songs at the moment, but we will be picking up on them in the coming weeks, I promise. And just to say, Richard has done a new article on the Patreon site, which is a review of Ride Live, and there are going to be more articles coming up there. Plus also for patrons, what I've been doing is, where possible, I have been posting things a little bit early. So, watch this space. I will continue to try and do as much as I can, because if people want to support me on there financially, then we want to make sure you're getting something special. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, just at Oasis Podcast. Email me oasispod@gmail.com. T-shirts are available at TeePublic, and please subscribe and review us on iTunes. That's the best thing you can do for us. So thank you so much for your time, and as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, stay young.